Hello, everybody, and welcome to Mound Talk Podcast, the podcast where we have on professional baseball players to give us inside access and details of what it's like being a pro athlete. Hey, everyone, welcome to episode 5 of Mound Talk Podcast. Today, we're joined by Travis Kuhn, who is a minor league pitcher in the Seattle Mariners organization. Travis is a California native who played college baseball at the University of San Diego before the Mariners drafted him in the 19th round of the 2019 draft. Today, we dive deep into his journey through high school baseball to the minors, dive into his training and nutrition, and have a special surprise at the end with Mariners legend Felix Hernandez. Let's go ahead and get into it. All right, we're here with Travis. So, Travis, go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself.
How's it going? My name is Travis Kuhn, right-handed pitcher with the Seattle Mariners organization. Grew up in in Norco, California, moved here from Lake Forest when I was about 8 years old. Played Norco High School and University of San Diego before getting picked up. And enjoyed my first year in 2019.
Awesome. So, you know, in high school, were you just a pitcher or was it, you know, what about high school?
Yeah, I actually had a pretty interesting route to where I'm at right now. My high school days were pretty interesting. I bounced around a little bit. I was at Santiago High School in Corona, California for my freshman year. Going into my sophomore year, I came out and transferred over to Norco, which is my home school. And I was an outfielder until my senior year. Hold up, he's whining. I'm gonna put him out real quick. My bad. Okay. So yeah, I was at Santiago freshman year. Sophomore year, I transferred over to Norco, and you know, I was an outfielder until my senior year. Didn't pitch at all until about halfway through my junior year. I started throwing a little bit. Had a couple looks as an outfielder in college, but wasn't really working out. Was pretty hit and miss at the plate. So had to find some consistency. And for me, that was pitching. And just kind of bought into that process and worked it out, and now we're here. So
with that, were you, I mean, you know, from outfield to pitcher, did you have a great arm, or was it just once you started using your arm to pitch and the repetition build up?
Yeah, so I was always kind of seen as a relatively good athlete, had some good speed, made the big plays, wasn't really very consistent at the plate or on the field, in all honesty. So as soon as I had a couple offers pulled as an outfielder, I figured it was about time to start pitching. I always had a pretty good arm. I tried pitching my freshman year, got told by a couple coaches that it wasn't going to work out, that I wasn't accurate enough, all that good stuff. And, you know, it's just one of those things where you got to have your own interest at heart, make some decisions based on you a little bit from time to time, obviously a big team guy, but especially when I was a younger athlete, there wasn't a whole lot of wiggle room as far as that decision was. You know, you got to make the decision that you're going to stick with and give yourself the best chance. So that was pretty much my philosophy back then. Really got humbled, to be completely honest with you. My junior year, that was a big moment for me where I kind of was never necessarily the guy, but was definitely on the lower end of the spectrum as far as talent goes. And, I had some things I had to get figured out on the field, off the field, just try to become a better person and understand what matters a little more and go from there. And that was kind of the big turning point for me.
Okay. So from that, how did it go from junior year, you know, thinking of that, you know, I guess a lot of stuff mentally you had to figure out and worry about. How did it go from transitioning in that part of it to, say, senior year where you go to San Diego?
Yeah, so I mean, it was a pretty smooth transition. You know, I had already had a little bit of experience with the recruiting process as a junior, as an outfielder. Long Beach State, a couple D2s here and there had reached out, so I was pretty familiar with that. I was confident in my ability to talk to these coaches and get my feet wet. And then by the time I started pitching, you know, there was a couple teams that kind of carried over, I guess, from when I was an outfielder that, you know, saw talent there and wanted to kind of follow that and see how that went. So that helped a little bit. Mostly D2 programs were on board at the start. And for me, it wasn't necessarily I never considered D2s. I almost committed to UC San Diego. Had it been for an SAT score a little higher, probably would have ended up committing there a little earlier. But I was a pretty okay school guy. I wasn't a best. And so luckier, however you want to put it. You know, it ended up working out. And by the time I got to campus my senior year at Norco, I had a couple offers, decided that I was going to take a different approach to it than when I was a hitter. I used to talk about it a lot. I used to be pretty arrogant. And, you know, just finding my place and knowing that the more I talk about it, the more embarrassing it's going to be when that thing gets pulled like it did. So for me, you know, just taking a step back and really figuring out like what matters. Is it the cool factor of getting offers, or is it, you know, actually playing at the next level? So I kind of kept my mouth shut and just worked, and ended up picking up an offer from USD as a basically a preferred walk-on.
Okay.
I had no money my freshman sophomore year, was expected to get a little bit later on. That didn't work out, but you know, it's part of the game. Baseball's a business all the way through, whether you're college, pro ball, whatever it is. So, you know, it happens, and it all worked out. So I really enjoyed my time there.
So from deciding, or once you started pitching and, you know, getting interest there, what stood out at San Diego versus some of the other schools that were interested?
Yeah, I mean, my biggest thing going into college was I wanted to go somewhere that I thought I was going to have the best opportunity to compete. I didn't want to go be a part of – I would much rather be a smaller part of a winning team than a larger part of a losing team. That's just been how I value things. I think winning's the best part about baseball. I think it's a really good time to win. So, you know, that was one of my things. It was one of the bigger programs that I had an official offer from. There were a couple that if I'd held out a little longer, could have potentially ended up at. But when I went and visited the campus, you know, if you ever had the opportunity to be in San Diego or specifically the USD campus, it's pretty hard to say no when that's in front of you. So when I went on that visit, it was pretty much on the spot that we ended up committing.
So once you got there, you redshirted your freshman year, right?
Yeah.
So what was that like? You know, when did you know you're going to redshirt?
Yeah. So, I mean, redshirting in general, it wasn't fun. I didn't enjoy it, but I did get a lot better from it. And at the end of the day, USD did a phenomenal job with my development as a player. I think my ego took a lot of hits, which was well needed. You know, finding that happy medium between being a really confident player and being over the top was really important for me as more of an immature athlete. And so, you know, redshirting was a big step in that process. You know, when I was told that I was redshirting officially, I had kind of got the idea. There was a couple instances where we had gone to a position guy before me pretty early in the season. So, you know, I kind of took my hints, but for the most part, I didn't know I was redshirting until about 3/4 of the way through the season, where I and it was tough. You know, I found out actually mid game when I was expecting that it was my time to get hot. So it was a lot in the moment, but again, I can honestly say I would not be anywhere near the player that I am without that staff at San Diego kind of holding me accountable and saying, you know what, you're not ready for this. That was a big eye opener for me. Pretty simply because even though I didn't have the experience of being the guy in high school all the time, I did feel like without being told no in my face in college, I could have easily fallen back into that same trap of, you know, thinking I was good enough. And so, yeah, USD helped a ton with that. When I got told I was redshirting, it became a year where it was like, hey, this is my development. This is how can I help the team win? How can I be the best teammate I could be? How can I make sure that I'm picking up the harder guy in catch play so that the guys that are playing can have a nice, easy day warming up? How can I make sure I'm getting the radar gun chart, all that good stuff. You know, it's grindy. The redshirt life isn't a whole lot of fun, but I can honestly say that it made me a much better player.
So once they told you you're redshirting, did the rest of the season, did any of the training differ, or was it pretty much just still, you know, the same as if you were playing still in season?
Yeah, you know, I can almost compare it to kind of the COVID year, honestly, looking into pro ball a little bit, where, you know, when that happens, I didn't travel with the team. I missed out on a lot of memories like that, but I also got to use that time where, you know, I didn't have to be preparing for a game. I could look at it as almost an off-season training where, you know, I knew summer ball was going to come up, and that was going to be a big opportunity for me to really show myself off and make it hard for that to ever happen again. But yeah, I mean, for me, it was, you know, I don't have to pitch tomorrow, so let's get after it today. And that was one of my biggest thing. Stayed away from the radar gun, stayed away from pretty much all the result stuff, and said, you know what, let's stick to this process. Let's see how good we can get and how much progress we can make this year. And, you know, went out and surprised a lot of people, I think, my freshman summer, coming off my freshman year, where I was really, really looking to earn a spot on that team.
That's awesome. So your redshirt freshman year, the next year, you were out of the bullpen, correct?
Yep. No starts in college.
Wow. Okay. And so was that year just one of those, like, showing what you finally could do, you know, still trying to work better? So when did the pro talk and, you know, just the possibility start coming into the picture?
Yeah, you know, I think I definitely threw my name out there a little bit that summer. You know, I showed a lot more velo than I'd ever shown before. I showed a much better breaking ball than I'd ever shown. Walks went down, strikeouts went up. So that was kind of the first turning point, was that summer. But, you know, then I get into my college season. It didn't result-wise go very well. You know, there were, for the most part, I was able to win a lot of games for us, which was awesome. But, again, that's kind of my value that I try to bring to a team, is the leadership and the winning aspect of it, not so much the results. And as much as, you know, you'd love to see those show up as well, it was a long year. It was a grindy year. It was, for the first part of the season, I was trying to earn my spot, earn my place on the team still. And once I kind of found that comfortability, you know, a couple bad outings out of the bullpen can add up. The biggest thing for me that year was learning to deal with failure, learning to deal with struggle in an actual season, as well as learning how to deal with success. I think it's almost harder a lot of the time, getting a couple good outings in a row and not being comfortable with that, and understanding that that's a product of the work that you're putting in, not just who you are. And I think it was kind of maturing as an athlete. Part of it was maturing as a person, just understanding that, you know, it's never going to be enough, and to be comfortable with that, and to understand that, you know, like, for me to be the best player that I'm going to be, I can't get comfortable, but at the same time, being able to take that in stride and not get too worked up about it, it was kind of a big turning point for that year. So,
okay.
As far as until my sophomore summer, in between my sophomore and junior year.
Okay. And so your junior year, you're going in with, I guess, like, the thought of, okay, you know, good season, keep working, and things should pan out the best way.
Yeah. I mean, to be completely honest with you, I took a lot of pride in separating the draft from my play. Okay. You know, during the off season, during the fall, where, you know, we're competing, that's where I scheduled all my meetings. I try not to schedule any draft meetings during February on. Was my focus is on winning right now. You know, and it's impossible to ignore it. You're still going to get calls throughout the week. You're still going to get reporters asking you about where you think you're going to end up and stuff like that. And it's a lot of noise, and it's not a lot of productive noise, in my opinion. I think a lot of the time, for me especially, I knew that for me to, number one, be comfortable walking away from college. I wanted to win. And unfortunately, we weren't able to do that while I was there. And but I wanted to set that winning culture kind of back in place at USD and take the leadership aspect of it and make that my selling point, not my play on the field. That was going to be a byproduct.
Awesome. So for those that don't know, you were drafted in 2019 by the Mariners. So were the Mariners one of the like leading teams in those, you know, talks your junior year?
Yeah, so it definitely helped that we played in Seattle. We actually played at T-Mobile Field. Fun fact, USD is the first ever team to get a win on at T-Mobile Park. And so, yeah, we came pretty much right after the run. Indiana, Coastal, Washington. All their teams were in there too. But that was kind of the big with the Mariners, you know, talking with a couple of the guys in the scouting department now with them, talking to the pitching coordinators and the farm directors. That was kind of where it seems that I had a game there on a Sunday where I went four innings of relief. It was four perfect innings with 10 strikeouts, Indiana team that was ranked at the time. And that was kind of that was probably my biggest outing of the year and was definitely, that was in the cross checkers from the Mariners. They were all there. So it helps when you're playing at their ballpark for sure day.
That's pretty cool. And that's pretty cool. Like to get to know the feel of, wow, like, you know, the stadium I'm hoping to play in, you know, within a few years is like, you know, where I had one of my best outings so far. So that's pretty exciting.
Absolutely. Think about it every day.
So talk through the draft day, like, you know, what's going on, how, you know, did you have people over, what's going on with all that?
Yeah. So pre-COVID time, I got to have, it was essentially just my girlfriend Mads and my mom and my family. That was about it. I personally, it was a pretty prepared come the eighth round till the 15th round. That was kind of my projection. And, you know, so it's a pretty stressful day. It's not as fun and glorious as people make it seem. I'm sure if you go in the first round, second round, a little less waiting around where you can get a little more comfortable. But for me personally, it was, you know, from really the 12th round on, I was on the phone, I was talking, I didn't have an agent. So I was talking to every single team that wanted me was going through me directly. And I was kind of pulling my own negotiations. Luckily, I had a couple people on my side in my corner that were helping me out quite a bit with that side of it. But, you know, it's a lot. It really is. And it's pretty grueling when those rounds start going pretty quick come day three, where, you know, there were times where I thought I had priced myself out. There were times that I had kind of just assumed that, you know, I was going to get an easier pick, I guess, where it's an easy yes right away. And it's not the reality of the draft. There's a lot of negotiating that goes around, especially when you don't have an agent. So that was a lot for me, but it was the best day of my life. I can't take that away from it. It was phenomenal. It was when I got that call where I was negotiating actually with the Mariners and the Cardinals pretty heavily in that 19th round. They were back-to-back picks. So it was essentially I was actually talking to a coach of mine that was one of my college coaches that I was trying to pull some negotiation techniques, and all of a sudden I see my name pop up, and it was I had been talking with the Mariners a little bit, but it was a bit of a surprise, and I was really, really excited to be a part of that organization with just my history in Seattle and being able to throw on the teal and get ready to roll. It was a good time.
That's awesome. So what did you choose not to use an agent? Did you not know any? Like what went that with that part?
Yeah, so I had a couple agents that I had been talking to. Luckily, I got really lucky. I had a couple people in the business that were family friends and that I had known from a little bit back, where, you know, the whole agent thing is tough because when what people don't talk about is like the agent fees and stuff like that, where, you know, when you're not signing for $2 million, $3 million, those agent fees can take a good chunk of that signing bonus, especially with taxes and everything. So, for me, I had been kind of advised to, you know, don't sign with anybody necessarily, and, you know, let it come to you and see what happens. You know, you can make a lot of good deals on your own. And especially when essentially I had two different agents in my ear, letting me know what I should be saying. So that was super, super helpful. You know, there are times definitely where having an agent would have made things a lot easier and a lot smoother. And I don't think there's a right or wrong way to go about it. I always tell young guys, if I get the chance to talk to them pre-draft, is, you know, like, go with what you feel is right. If you trust a guy, then it's probably a good move. If you don't trust a guy, then it's probably not a good move. It's pretty simple as that.
That's awesome. That's not very common that you see guys, like, you know, confidently go without having an agent. And so that's pretty cool to see that you did it. It worked out, you know, pretty well, it looks like, obviously. And, you know,
absolutely.
So you spent your first year back and forth between Everett and West Virginia, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was it like playing, you know, not in Seattle, but still up in the Washington area?
Man, I love the area. I love the Pacific Northwest. I've actually considered buying a house out there and getting moved out there full time. It's beautiful out there. I love the people. I love the area. I love the food. And, you know, the Everett fans were great. I think they welcomed us all with open arms. And
they are a huge, and, like, family environment type feel.
Very, very much so. And I think Seattle Mariner fans in general are one of the more underrated fan bases. I mean, it's biased as a player, but when you're really looking at the history that the Mariners have had and the troubles that we've had and just the amount of fans that have stuck by through it all and really have our back, I mean, they deserve to see something big coming up pretty soon. And I honestly believe that's coming. And I think playing, I mean, even in West Virginia, it was a relatively new affiliate. Obviously we are no longer with them anymore, but West Virginia was awesome too. Another great group of guys, another great coaching staff that really had our backs and let us know that, you know, playing for pro ball coaches is definitely a lot different than playing for college coaches. The culture is different. The vibe's different. The goals are different. And, you know, having coaches, you know, younger coaches still in the game, coaches that are like just out, those guys are really, really helpful in development because they're seeing you from a different perspective. Not that college isn't, but, you know, it's a whole new game, and it's the same game, but it's played differently. It's talked about differently. There's new talk about spin rate. I didn't know what any of that was. And when I was in college, you know, we had the information, but it was, you know, all that, it was still relatively new, so we didn't really understand it. And that, I mean, the analytical side of it that's been introduced has been, like, honestly game changing. It's life changing.
It's been like changes exploding. The way you think about
everything.
It's been recent exactly. That just blew up. Mm-hmm. So in Everett, you know, there's all kinds of like horror stories of minor league, you know, like when you get called up to a new level. Did you get to find out you're going to West Virginia when you're at home in Everett, or were you?
I did not.
Road trip.
I was mid road trip. Didn't see it coming really. I knew I was having a pretty decent year at the time, but you know, they had actually just called like three or four guys up about 2 days before I did. So, you know, I figured that happened, and you know, we were moving forward, and I was getting ready to pitch in Spokane that day, and then had my little travel bag after BP get called into the office. They let me know I'm moving up and to go ahead and take an Uber back to the hotel, get some food, get a nap in maybe, and be ready to pitch tomorrow on the East Coast. So that was
crazy.
And so I had about a 12-hour travel day that day and ended up throwing in the eighth inning that night. So it was it was a long day. It was exciting though. I was excited to be out there, and I was pushing for it. They had asked me pretty straight up, like, how you feeling? Do you feel like you can pitch today? And I wanted the ball, plain and simple. I wanted to make my statement and, you know, get the ball and get your chance and do what you can with it. So
how's that go with all your, you know, like you're living in Everett, you get called up. So how does it go with getting all your, you know, your belongings up there?
Yes, they do a pretty good job. You know, you can hit the club, yeah, they'll reimburse you for any travel fees for the most part. If you need an extra bag, they'll send you an extra bag. They'll ship it all to you. So it's pretty smooth. There's not a whole lot of worries when you're moving. You're just excited to move and go meet the guys and get to play. And I mean, that was my biggest thing is, you know, I wanted to play professional baseball because I want to play baseball for as long as I can. Not so much, you know, the money's nice here and there. Obviously in the minor leagues.
Not in the minors, yeah.
but and the fans nice and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, like I wanted to play baseball. So all the other stuff kind of comes secondary. And you know, when you get told you're moving, it's like, all right, when's my plane? When am I playing? That's all I'm really concerned about, and everything else is gonna get taken care of.
Did you have a
job allowing you to do that?
Did you have a host family or do you have an apartment out there?
Yeah, I was lucky enough to get a host mom. It's kind of weird calling her a mom because she was awesome, Michelle. She's helped me out quite a bit, and we've held a pretty good relationship outside of that. And you know, I've had host families in college and they're all great. You know, you spend a lot of time in their house, you get to know them pretty well. And you know, I don't know how they do it, how they open up houses to 18 to 25 year olds. It's awesome that they do it. It's a big commitment, and I know plenty of stuff that comes with that. And you know, I couldn't be more appreciative of any of the host families. They always do a great job, and Michelle was awesome.
That's awesome. So I know you especially are very big on like sharing some information and sharing your training with, you know, like on Instagram. What makes you like, I mean, so what makes you want to share? What makes you, you know, from the guys that don't post that they ever go to the gym? I mean, they do, but like from the ones that don't share it and the ones that do, why did you lean that way?
Yeah, it's a great question. I got some hot takes a lot of the time with baseball and training and stuff like that. I think a lot of the time when you're looking at baseball as a game these days, it's almost turned into a pay to play where it's, you know, to get that high level of training, you know, there's a cost and you have to go to these crazy facilities. You have to go get programming done by these great companies when they're out there. I work with Tread Athletics. They do an awesome job with my programming. But you know, it's a lot. It's especially for a younger athlete like myself. When I was in high school, I was lucky enough to have a local training, facility allow me to come in and give me a discount because the money wasn't as realistic all the time. And you know, my family, when you're trying to convince a family of business people essentially to let you go play baseball for a career, it's a lot. So you know, and I understand that. It's so I try to put out as much as I can. I try to give people a little look into what I do on a daily basis. I think it's valuable information. You know, I used to follow a lot of training, big league training staff, big league weight room guys, like stuff like that. I used to follow them when I was in high school, college, just trying to get a glimpse into what they're doing. And, so, you know, I'm just trying to keep that running. It's not the highest quality all the time. Luckily I have a great girlfriend who does sports media and she helps me put out some good content here and there, but
that works,
you know,
out
really.
Well.
Oh, awesome. Phenomenal. She does a great job, but, you know, it helps when people talented like that are on your side and helping you put out that content. But for the most part, you know, there's a lot of people that I found myself talking to in the last year, high school athletes, younger athletes, where, you know, there's this misconception that, you know, you have to be big, you have to be strong, you have to be all these things to be successful. And it's true, there is a baseline, but I used to have quite the ego in the weight room. I was a national strength and conditioning All-American and in college. I put up big numbers in a weight room, which is awesome. But at the end of the day, if you can squat 600 pounds but can't throw 100, is it really helping you? And that's kind of been my whole new idea of training, and Tread's helped me out a lot with that, and the Mariners have helped me out a lot with that, and kind of training as a baseball player. And, you know, now that I know that, I know that young athletes think the same things that I did when I was younger, you know, put it out there and see what athletes can become with that information on their side. It's super valuable.
You're actually the second guy I've had on out of the five episodes with Tread, or that has at least used Tread.
Oh, there you go. Who's the other guy?
Mike Pasco.
Good deal. He's a Blue Jays guy, right?
Also, he's a free agent right now, but yeah, he was with the Blue Jays.
Gotcha.
So we know, I mean, I've seen like huge numbers, you know, especially when it comes to leg lifts. But how much of that were you huge as big in nutrition too? Or was that just kind of like eat when
just as big, just as important, if not more important, honestly. Nutrition's been something I kind of started to figure out it a little bit, definitely not to any real extent, but you know, I started paying attention when I was probably a junior in high school, right when that switch flipped where it was, okay, you know, you're not good enough, you got to work. That was kind of when I started getting in the weight room consistently and aggressively, and bringing nutrition along with that. But yeah, you know, like when you are working out consistently and you are throwing and you're doing all these things, which is awesome. It really is. That alone can get you a lot of places. But when you start talking about nutrition, recovery, moving better, range of motion, all that stuff, you know, I personally spend way, way more time with the nutrition and the recovery aspects than the lifting stuff and the throwing. And, you know, it's the lifting and the throwing's flashy and it's exciting because you get to put up these numbers, you get a flash velo, you get to do all this stuff and it looks better on social media. But at the end of the day, that doesn't happen consistently without a whole background of nutrition and recovery. You know, I spend probably 2 hours, 2.5 hours a day on recovery alone, making sure that my sleep schedule's perfect, dialed in. I use Whoop. They do most of my performance tracking, my recovery tracking. I have a couple companies that really help me out with the recovery aspect.
You're big with Ramwad, right?
I love Ramwad. They're an awesome. I discovered them in college when I was at University of San Diego. The strength coach Matt Couch. He's at UT now, Texas.
Okay.
But he was the first person to really introduce Ramwad to me and the importance of moving. And we had a yoga instructor, Jen, when I was at USD. That, you know, these ideas of like, okay, so I have this squat number, I have this bench number, I have this deadlift number. These are all great. I'm top percentile of these, but I still can't touch my toes. I still can't get my arm into a position that it needs to get to throw really hard and stuff like that. So it was, okay, you know what? Like, that's great. We have a ton of muscle mass. We have a ton of muscle strength, but how can we, you know, alter that muscle tissue into something that can be malleable enough to actually move correctly down the mound. And Ramwad, I every single night, 20 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever the program is for the day, that's my mobility before I go to sleep. Tread's put me on quite a warm-up program. Took me a while to get used to spending that 30 minutes before I throw. But you know, it's game changing. I've always been a velo up and down guy. You know, I could be 88 one day, I could be 96 the other day, and it's frustrating. So finding a way to get my body at baseline, back to baseline every day, is that it starts with nutrition, it ends with stretching, it ends with mobility. It's all important.
So you mentioned your Ramwad is part of your night routine. Do you have like a full full routine you do every night for that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I use, it's actually right here. It's a Higher Dose. It's this company that does infrared saunas. They've sent me a little sauna set where it's essentially a sleeping bag that I get into for about 45 minutes. Okay. I'll use it pre-throw, pre-workout, but it's only like 10 minutes, get a light sweat going before I go through my dynamic warm-up. But yeah, so every night, that's how it starts. I get in my sauna. That's kind of the start of my wind down time. Normally about 10 PM. I get in my last meal around 9:30. Depending if it's a weight gain period, I'll eat again around 10:30 or 11. But I hop in that for about 30 to 45 minutes max, but most of the time around 30 minutes. Get up after that, do my ROM WOD, and then follow it up with some soft tissue stuff. I use a brand called So Right, has sent me a couple variations of their stuff that really helps target some more difficult areas, deeper into the hips, deeper into the groin, the psoas area, even shoulder stuff that I do with them pretty consistently. And then from there, do any kind of rolling out that I need to do that day. And then kind of wind down, drink some chamomile tea most of the time, and get to bed. And try to be in bed for a minimum of 8.5 hours a night. Figure there's going to be about 30 minutes of latency. And you know, try to be between 8 to 10 hours, depending if it's peak day or not. So,
okay, awesome. So we've covered most of that. The one thing I wanted to talk to you about is in like personally, like I noticed. So you are one that I started doing ROM WOD after I saw you post about it. And then as well as that, crossover symmetry. So talk a little bit about, you know, your difference. I've talked to you before about this, but your difference of J bands, cross symmetry when you use them, because you use both, correct? So talk a little bit about the differences and how you found both.
Definitely. So my crossover symmetry, you know, they sent me out the full set last off season. I used it a lot in college. It was a big part of my arm care routine. And I love it. I think they do an awesome job really, really giving you a program essentially with their equipment that is pretty flawless. You know, it covers everything. Now that I'm working with Tread, I use it a little less. I use it more supplementary because I have my own arm care program with them as well. And I used to be a guy that would overdo arm care quite a bit. Similar to the weight room, I like feeling like I did something, and sometimes that's not always the goal, you know? But yeah, so personally, I like to use J-bands before. I know some people like to use crossover before as well. Crossover was always a directly after throwing, get my blood flow going, get the lactic acid out before I go into the training room and get some more stuff done in there. But yeah, they do an awesome job. Even when I'm not doing it as an arm care program, talk about something that's nice to have in a weight room. When you are going through certain movements, banded movements, like 2.5 pound weights, anytime you're going through your ITYs, anything like that, it's an awesome way to be able to mix it up. It's a great option. And, you know, their customer service is great. They're always willing to help out. And they're coming out with their new arm care program.
Yeah.
Is super, super interesting to me. I think they do like daily testing now, based on a wrist strap, if I remember right. And super, super interesting. That's some big league stuff. And, to be able to have access to that, especially as a high school college guy, like that's super, super valuable stuff.
I actually found that out from, the arm care stuff. From Joe Bimel, who's a former Mariner.
Okay, good deal.
He's got a facility out in El Paso and somewhere in California, and he's started to use that. And he said he uses his products before he has his athletes use them, and that helped him like bring back some of his velocity. So I've been looking into it and watching it.
Yeah, no, and I mean, it's just like if you look at the state of baseball now, the amount of data driven, like everything you were doing is data driven at this point, even down to high school a lot of the time, which is why I said before it's becoming almost pay to play, because you have to get that data somewhere. But when we're in pro ball, it's every throw that you make. A lot of the time, if you're in a flat ground, they'll throw a Rap Soto in front of you. If you're in a bullpen, it's on TrackMan. If you're in a game, it's on TrackMan, and you're getting data. Wow. Every single throw that you're making. And for me, I think let's take that a step further. You watch the guys like Trevor Bauer. If you get into his vlogs, he's got his deal with Momentum where he tracks everything and
crazy routines. I mean,
and look what he's able to do. And so I think a lot of guys like that, Reeves Martin with the Mariners is one of the guys that came in my draft class. And you know, like he's very much like that. Let's track everything. Jared Bayless, very similar.
Yeah.
Evan Johnson, very similar. All my draft class guys. And like, you're seeing guys come out younger and younger that are willing to put in that time and effort, because it's not easy all the time. You know, tracking calories sucks. It's not fun, but counting macros sucks. It's not fun. But all these things can really, really make a huge difference. I mean, even the Whoop band, like they're letting me be able to track my recovery and track my sleep cycles and all that stuff. Like all of that information means something. And if it doesn't mean something yet, it's because you don't understand it deep enough yet. And, you know, it's all out there. You can do your own research. I think Elon Musk said it. You don't need to go to college anymore to learn stuff. You could learn from anything. And not that college isn't important, but it's all out there.
So to wrap this up, this episode up, who is your favorite pitcher? And then also, who do you think was the best of all time?
Nolan Ryan is my GOAT personally. You know, I'll do a little fun fact. Favorite pitcher growing up was Felix, actually, which
really
got something I could show off a little bit. Like to bring it out any chance that I get. So when Felix came down for a rehab start, he was able to throw a couple pitches in a game.
And oh, wow.
Happened to do so with this glove. He came up to me after his outing. I kind of messed with him before the game about I'll buy it off him. And he ended up giving it to me, signing it for me, and told me to go ahead and use it because I was closing that night. So
things got awesome.
both of our sweat in it.
That's awesome. That's pretty crazy.
But, you know, the guy that I really looked up to. It was a guy I looked up to, watched him throw a perfect game live, and, you know, doesn't get much better than that. So
yeah. What do you think? What do you think he's going to do for next season? You know, any idea of where you think he's going to end up?
I wish I can give you some input. You know, I think he's still got it in the tank. He showed it last spring training. You know, but I hope the best for the guy. He's just a good dude. You know, he's not trying to big league anybody. When he came down, he was giving advice. He was showing his changeup, which really made him one of the best pitchers of the generation. And you know, in my mind, he's still no doubt a Hall of Famer and one of the greatest to ever throw on the Northwest green. So, you know,
and he's still what, like 34? He's still got, you know, some
got,
time to have a few good years.
Left.
Yeah.
Definitely, you know, and I mean, I know he's putting in his work and getting ready to go. And, you know, I hope the best for him and his career and be able to maintain it and keep it going. So.
And I mean, as a Mariners fan myself, that'd be awesome to see him, even if it's, you know, another team, just to come back and have two, three good seasons left.
It's a lot. You know, I got mixed feelings on it because that farewell game at T-Mobile was so, so emotional.
Huge.
And so perfect, I think. And it's tough to, you know, you're going to watch him go strap it up for another team. You hope you get to play him at some point and be able to, you know, just let him know, you know, it's awesome when you get an opportunity to play with or against a guy like that. So when there's that much history there, that was definitely one of the cooler moments of my first year in pro ball.
That's awesome. Well, I wanted to thank you again for coming on.
Absolutely, man. Of course.
I wanted to give a special thanks to everyone who tuned in to this episode. To find more of Travis on Instagram, you can go to Travis Ray Kuhn, KUHN. And in his bio, there's a link to his performance account too, if you're interested. To find more of us, Mound Talk Podcast, you can search at Mound Talk Podcast on YouTube or Instagram and see more. Thanks, guys.